Okay, my name is Michael Zrid, and today is the 17th of June, 2014, around 4 p.m. We're at 241 Warren Street, and this is part of the Hudson Oral History Project, as part of the Oral History Summer School. I'm with Isabel Barton, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And so I'm just going to begin and ask you to introduce yourself.
Okay, my name is Isabel Barton, and I live here. I've been in Hudson since 1994. I'm originally from Venezuela. I'm a filmmaker, that's it.
Great. So maybe tell me a little bit about where you came from, your past.
I was born in Caracas, Venezuela. I went to New York City, went to Berkeley in 1973. New York City stayed in 1974. And I've been living in New York State since then. Moved to Hudson in 94. I was originally a photographer, and then turned into a filmmaker. And I've been working here in Hudson as a filmmaker since I've been here. Let's see, what else? We moved into this house in 2001. When we first came to Hudson, we lived in Allen Street, just basically two blocks away from here, exact same level between second and third. And we bought this house basically because it was very versatile. It has a lot of potential for different things. There's a carriage house in the back. It's a house from I've been told that it's from before 1820. Because the boards, it has these floors. There's another floor underneath each floor. So, and those floors, the white board ones, are hand chiseled in every place where they set. So that dates the house to before 1820. So I love history. I love architecture. I come from a family of architects in Venezuela, and I was an architectural photographer. I was trained, and I mentored with Ezra Stoller, who was Frank Lloyd Wright's photographer. And I have this affinity for space and architecture and the history of buildings and cities. And so this place really caught my attention because the carriage house is wonderful, and it has an interesting history of... there's something about Hudson that I really love that is, actually, I made a short documentary that was intended to be a pilot for a 5 or 6 episodes for television, and it was called Unraveling Hudson. And it dealt with the history of the architecture of the city of Hudson. And one of the things about, the most striking things about the architecture of Hudson is that it is layered. So that in one building or a few buildings, you can tell what happened through a very long time, since the beginning to what's happening now. The reason being that there was a lot of times not enough money in this city to make lots of changes, like demolish and start over, which was lucky for all of us. And so the buildings have a layering quality of time. So this house, you can tell this house was built, like I said, before 1820, and so it was a two-story Federalist house, very square, very wonderful, very Grecian in its proportions. And then in the Victorian times, this third floor was added, and that portico, the beautiful portico, you know, at the entrance of the house was added. And these floors, the second layer of floors are Victorian also. And so you can see so much of, you know, what was going on. Like the house next door, for example, was actually the entrance. If you look in the back, you can see that the carriage house is very wide. It's much wider than this house, and so it goes on to the next house. So we share part of the carriage house. It was because that whole house was the entrance for the carriages, so the carriages would go through there and then back to the carriage house, and then the horses would stay there. And so, you know, all that is very, I feel like I'm living in some sort of theater or movie, or You know, a place where you can really tell about history and space and how people lived and, you know, the structure of things in general. So, you just want me to continue talking? Okay, I can talk. So let me see. So that history, that pilot that I did is very interesting. And it really made me look into, it put together several things for me, several things that interest me. Architecture, as I said, photography, movie making, I did finish the pilot, and it showed several places. It showed at the Bronson House, which actually, you know, the Bronson House? The Bronson House is this house that's just outside of Hudson that is actually inside the prison. It's the it's a mid-level security prison just outside of Hudson. When you come into the city of Hudson, you go down 9G to that place as a swamp. That used to be actually the North Bay, which is like one of the two bays that were in either side of the city of Hudson. So that that was where all the tall ships were. So that's really beautiful, filled with history, that area. So that was the North Bay, and there was a house all the way at the end of the North Bay that was owned by a captain. I think his name was Plum. And so that was a big estate, and eventually it got bought by somebody else whose name was Bronson. And this man decided to replicate that beautiful house and make another exact opposite, I mean, like just mirror it. But it was a different time, so that the second half was built with, everything was machine-made instead of handmade. So all the different ornaments are gorgeous, but they are machine-made. It's completely different from the other side. It's a gorgeous house. Now it's part of a historic Hudson, it's not owned by them, it's owned by the state of New York. But because it is inside, it was given away to New York State by the owners because, you know, like so many great estates, because they couldn't afford the taxes. So like so many other big places, it was given for prisons because, you know, it's a place where else would they go? So there's a prison there, and for a long time the warden lived up on the house, and, you know, it went through a lot of different changes. And now it's being taken care of by historic Hudson, who's gotten a lot of grants to redo it. But that house fascinates me because that in itself is exactly what I love about the city of Hudson's architecture, that layering effect. I mean, there is like literally two halves. And so it's fascinating to be able to, you know, see how changes happen, you know, in the way people live, even if they're trying to do it exactly the same way. It's impossible. So anyway, so I did that, and that one pilot was about the Bronson House, and it's very beautiful. I wish I could finish that project someday. So let's see. I was going to tell you that that I am working with oral history in my current project. I have been working with a tribe of Indians in the Amazon, and they are the Pemon people. I mean, they're actually one of three tribes of Pemon people. And I have been working with a woman who is the great-granddaughter of the great chief of all of the Pemon, and there has been no recording of the history of that man and how he gathered. He was basically the one who established their code of behavior and their, you know, their whole like unwritten constitution. So it's been a fascinating project. I've been working on it I'm going on to 10 years. So it's a great project, and so I appreciate what you guys are doing greatly. What else can I tell you? Can you guide me a little bit?
Sure. What were some of the factors that impeded the Hudson project?
Money. Mm-hmm. Simply money. People loved it. I showed it at the Bronson House, and I showed it here in Hudson, a couple of different places, and then I just gave up trying to find the money, you know. I don't consider myself a documentarist. I like fiction better, but I seem to end up always doing things that are have a document that are based on documentation. So, but I still look at that project and I still say, you know, this should be done, and maybe someday I'll finish it. It's a fantastic project.
You mentioned the layers that you're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of your interest in the document, or?
I guess. I think that's kind of like an existential question, because I think everything is made of layers of things. Whether it's a person, you know, I mean, how many times do you change in your life or go through realizations? Or, I mean, I come from a very kind of. Somebody used to tell me, you have a checkered past, in a sense that I, you know, I'm not a person, I mean, like my husband, he was born very close to New York State, he was born in Connecticut, and basically moved to, like, Westchester, and has since moved very little. I mean, he's gone abroad a lot, and he's studied, and he's taught in China, and he's done a lot of things, but his center remains the same, you know, and I don't have that at all. I broke with my past at a certain point, and I left everything behind, and I keep going through immense changes. I reinvent myself all the time, and I end up in completely different places and wonder how I got there. And so, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so fascinated by the layers of history, because it's just like in any human being, you know. I mean, some of us more than others, I mean, or more visibly than others, but in the end, I think we all are like that. But that's a good question, thank you. And I was going to say something when I talked about this. Well, let me see. I talked about, I don't know, it went away, but it will come back.
The architecture, maybe?
No, it was something having to do with the places, but I can't remember where it was. It went away, but it'll come back.
You said you came to Hudson in 1994.
Oh, it was about Hudson, thank you. It was about Hudson because that's what fascinates me about Hudson. I always say Hudson is a border town, because, you know, this town, if you read Moby Dick and the first chapter of Moby Dick and the description of Nantucket, you're reading the history of Hudson. That's what Hudson was like in the time when it was a whaling town. It was crazy. You know, all people that were here were from other places. You know, they were from very far away. They're about to embark on a journey that would take them 5-7 years away. You know, they didn't know if they were going to come back or not. So they had no center. They had no, you know, it was like a place where people just came momentarily or on their way somewhere else. And it was full of whorehouses, and it was the bars, and it was a very dark life, you know. And I've been into other places that are like that. There's a particular place in Venezuela that is at the, you know, the Orinoco River is the second largest river in South America, and it has a huge delta out into the Atlantic Ocean. And the pirates, like, you know, the pirates from England and Spain and all these people would come into, not from Spain, but particularly from England, they would come through the delta trying to get into Venezuela, because that's where El Dorado was. So the Spaniards had a city that, actually, you know, the Angostura Bitter? Do you know Angostura Bitter? Angostura Bitter comes from Angostura, and Angostura was the name of this city that later got changed to Ciudad Bolívar. But its original name was Angostura, and Angostura means narrow place. So it's because it was it was like you got this huge delta, and you have this huge river, and then there was this one rock in the middle, and it made the river very narrow in one place. And so on that rock, they made a fort to stop the pirates. So so that city was built on that rock, and that city has the same sense that Hudson has. It's a tiny little city, very historic, and it has people from all over the world. You'll see a flutist from Milan and a scientist from Russia and a linguist from Cuba. And, you know, it's like all kinds of people in a small place, very intense. Everybody's doing what they want to do. It's very similar, you know. And it always, remember that the bar, the famous bar in Star Wars? That's the same sense. It's people are going to bounce to go somewhere else. They stop here for a certain amount of time. So I relate to this.
Has Hudson always been like that for you, or has it changed?
I think my nature is that of a traveler, you know. I'm a Sagittarian, and I believe in astrology, so, you know, that's but it, no matter what, I I move and travel and go to very faraway places and go by myself and like to do things like that. So, in a sense, you know, I'm an adventurer. So I think a lot of people that come here are like that.
When you came here, did it feel like it was an adventure?
Well, you know, when we first came here, there was all Warren Street was boarded up.
Hmm.
There was basically nothing going on. There were a couple, you know, a few antique shops here and there uptown, but basically everything else was boarded up. All the second and third floors were uninhabited because when this was all shut back in the 1960s, they had closed off the staircases to have more room in the ground floor for the shops. So there was no access to the second and third floors of the buildings on Warren Street. You know, when we first came, I had heard about Hudson. I had lived in the Catskill Mountains when my kids were growing up, inside the Catskill Preserve. So I kind of knew this area, sometimes stopping on the way, like Rhinebeck or something like that, going on the way back to the city. But I had heard about Hudson, and we had a friend of a friend who was here. And so we came up 9G from Red Hook, which I knew from the times in the Catskills. And we came down, you know, we came down the same way, down 9G and up to Allen Street, made a right. And Allen Street is one of the more beautiful streets anywhere. I mean, the architecture along Allen Street is fantastic. But at that time, everything was dilapidated. All these buildings looked like they were from some ghost town, but they were gorgeous, but they were like run down and looked like they would never be able to be rescued. But there was something just really called me. That was it. That's all I needed. I just, that one run through Allen Street, that was it. I'm done. I'm here. This is it. My husband wasn't so convinced, but I convinced him. And it was, you know, it was really kind of, you used to walk up and down Warren Street and you could single out the few people that came from the city, you know, or from other places, but they were not locals. It was a very different place then, you know. It was a very interesting place to come to. And that was only 94.
Hmm.
I mean, when we moved into this house, that house across the street that is like two buildings together used to be a crack house. And there was a lot going on there. So they had whores upstairs, and they were selling crack in the ground floor. The guy would sit in the stoop of the stairs with our neighbor and wait for his clients to do the dealings and then take them upstairs. You know, it was like, it was amazing to be here. And that was already 2001.
So when did things change?
Progressively, every year a little bit, you know. I think in the last 3 years, there's been, you know, a kind of like, we used to say the invasion of the strollers, you know, because suddenly, even 5 years ago, there weren't that many young people here. Yeah, you know, but suddenly there were strollers around the street, you know, rolling along the street, and it was like, and dogs, a lot of dogs, and you see the change, you know.
You mentioned your kids.
I have two children. I have a son. Let me see. His name is Guillermo. We call him Gil. He lives in Marina del Rey. And he is a restaurateur and actor. And he's married to an architect, again. She's fantastic. And she works with a firm in LA who's my cousin. And one of my mother's sisters from Caracas married an architect who was actually from, he was a Croatian family from Yugoslavia, who and he was head of the landscape architecture department at Berkeley. So she married and went to Berkeley, so I always had a family in Berkeley. So when I decided to leave my country, I went first to Berkeley, spent like 4 months there, then went back and made my final decision and came to New York. It was interesting because at that time, I mean, I had 2 children already, and obviously my marriage wasn't doing well. And I began working as a photographer without any instruction other than what I had read and studied on my own. So and I did really, really well. I mean, I got the national prize. I was the first woman ever to win the National Prize of Venezuelan Photography. And you know, I have kinds of clients, architecture clients, and it was at that time that I read the work of and the kind of philosophy of photography of Ezra Stoller, and whom I met later on by chance, by lucky chance. So yeah, I started working. I worked for like 3 years, and I rocketed, and I had nowhere else to go. I just was hungry for more, you know, and I just couldn't find any place. There was no place to study. There were no masters. There were no, nothing. So I decided to check out Berkeley because it was easy for me, you know. So I went there, and my uncle was fantastic. He introduced me to all the people. And at that time, architecture, this is story, architecture and photography and many other things were under the design department. And so he introduced me to the people in the photography department, which was the same department, and then I just took off, you know. I mean, they just opened the doors for me for everything. I met Ansel Adams and Wynne Bullock and a bunch of the great photographers, and I went to their houses. I just, you know, I attended all the classes for like several months. It was amazing. So, but I felt that it wasn't what I was looking for, because I was already taking a lot of chances, and I knew I had been to. There's a every 2 years there is a fantastic photography convention in Cologne, Germany, and I was lucky enough to go to one of them because my husband from my first marriage had his family was in the photography business, and that's why it was so easy for me to get into the business of photography. I mean, I wasn't in the business, I was a photographer, but you know, because I had access to all the equipment and I had access to a lab, and I had, like, it was very easy for me to do that. So that was a great plus. So traveling with him, I went to Cologne, and I went to this incredible convention where there were the most amazing exhibits of photography. And by the way, that was the first time I ever saw a hologram, and it was stunning. I mean, it was like seeing a live person. It was an amazing experience. But I never forget the things that the kind of photography that I saw there. I saw the work of Duane Michaels, who was doing sequential photographs, and they were totally underground type, you know, like avant-garde photography, and it just blew my mind. And then I was in California, and I was taking a class at San Francisco. What is it? San Francisco Art Institute. The teacher was fascinated by the work of Deanna Arbus, and I got really introduced into what that meant. And everything else happening in California was Edward Weston type, you know, and Ansel Adams. You know, very pristine, perfect, you know, nothing underground, nothing going on there. Idina Arbus was in New York But actually, Dinarbus, I think, had already died, but her whole thing of what had happened in New York, and Duane Michaels was in New York, and all these different people that I liked and really, you know, was intrigued by were in New York. So I went back to Venezuela, and I decided I was going to leave, but I didn't know where, you know. But that did it, you know. It was funny because it was a July 4th, which in Venezuela is July 5th in Venezuela is our Independence Day. So I was playing tennis, and I suddenly saw that I was leaving. That was it. That I was not just going for 4 months anywhere. That I wasn't gonna, you know, and I just said to myself, okay, imagine the world map and choose, you know, just choose where you're gonna go. Since I had been in Germany, I was attracted to Germany because they have such an incredible history and culture of photography. So I was intrigued by Germany, so I, you know, choose. So I said, no doubt, New York. So I just applied to the School of Visual Arts. I hadn't gone to college. I married right out of high school. And so applied, and they jumped me 2 years because of my work, published work. And so, of course, I stayed. You know, I mean, I stayed to finish because it was only 2 years instead of four. And then I just stayed. So that's the adventurous spirit in me. Came to New York by myself with two kids, going back to school, 1974. So, what else?
Tell me about a day in the life of an artist in Hudson.
Oh, well, you know, I'm not 25 anymore, so it's not like it would be the life of an artist in New York when I'm younger. But let's see, I have a very active family in Venezuela still. My mother actually is dying, and it's really quite an amazing experience to live, to get the opportunity to help her die well, you know. And I'm dedicating a lot of my time to that. My mother is who turned 96 this year. So when I have three sisters, but one of them is in Europe, just moved to, everybody in Venezuela is moving out of Venezuela because it's such a disaster. So usually the young people are leaving, and so the country is not going to have any youth. That's why the people were in the streets fighting, you know, like around February and March, because there's no future, you know, everybody can leave. So my sister's kids, three of the kids were in Europe, so she just took off. She's my older sister, she's 2 years older than me, she's a cardiologist. And so I have another two sisters that are there. And so you asked me that today, I've spent most of my day dealing with my mother. So, you know, that's very much in my mind. But, you know, I usually, I work here, right here in this room. So my bedroom is right there. And that's, you know, the room over there I spend a lot of time with, because that's the one room in the house that has the view over the Castle Mountains. And I love that room. So I take my laptop over there and I start working. And I have the movie that I'm editing, the movie that I told you about the Indians. I have a screenplay that I'm writing. I just finished a course that I gave, a filmmaking course for the kids in the Hudson School, in the, the junior high. The first time they got any filmmaking at all, and it was the only alternative they had in any of the classes after school for anything that wasn't sports. So it was a big deal. And we finished the movie and we showed it, actually screened it at the Crandall Theater on May 4th. And it was fantastic. So that's done, which is great because it was an immense amount of work. And so I have a writers group that I lead that we meet. We're supposed to meet actually tomorrow, but we're doing next week. But we do it once a month. And we have a couple of poets and a couple of people doing memoirs and fiction or novel writer and myself, or I'm a screenwriter. Two people are writing novels. And let's see. What else do I do? My garden. I spend a lot of time in the garden. My garden is great. I'll take you on the way out so you can see it. It's fantastic. I love my garden. This house takes a lot of time. This house is not easy living. It was divided into tenement apartments back in the 1920s, probably, or 30s, and it's just hard living. This year we were able to, last winter we were able, last fall we were able to put in a new heating system in the third floor. Up until now I was living, well, we were living in the third floor with those old big clunky stoves, one on here and one there, and it was tough living. So the tiny little bathrooms are tiny, so it's always something we're doing. We just finished painting the door. I don't know if you saw it, it's gorgeous. And that was really deteriorating, so it's great to have rescued it, you know. So there's always something happening. We're doing the kitchen, and we have a couple of things in the bathrooms, and there's always something happening with the house. So that pretty much takes care of it.
Great. I'm gonna do something I probably shouldn't do, but when I began, I'm worried my batteries are running out, so I'm gonna change the
Oh,
batteries.
that's a good idea.